Welcome to Andrew's Answers, Life's Questions Answered. Hi, I'm Dr. Rusty Andrews, the host of Andrew's Answers, right here on Kanza Internet Radio. Welcome to our program where we talk about areas of interest to mental health and also answer your life's questions. You can send us emails and get your questions answered by sending an email to answers, A-N-S-W-E-R-S, at andrewsinc.net. That's andrewsinc.net. Follow us on Twitter at Rusty Andrews, or check us out at the Kanza Internet Radio webpage at kanzaradio.org. That's K-O-N-Z-A radio.org. Thanks for listening, and also remember that when we talk about answers to life's questions, all statements are intended to be helpful in a general way, and answers are of a general nature. They are not intended to take the place of personal counseling or input from a mental health professional with whom you would work directly. Send us your questions, and we will make sure that you are not personally identifiable on the air. So ask us anything you'd like about life and life's questions. Today, I thought I would talk a little bit about workplace bullying. It's a much bigger issue and is receiving a lot more attention than it used to receive. And in fact, there are actually laws that are being proposed in several states that would make workplace bullying illegal. However, no state has such a law right now. Let me talk a little bit first about the definitions of bullying, what workplace bullying is. The state of Washington has put together a pamphlet about workplace bullying, and it gives this definition, which is repeated unreasonable actions of individuals or a group directed towards an employee or a group of employees, which is intended to intimidate and creates a risk to the health and safety of the employees. If you go to Wikipedia, you find the definition of the tendency of individuals or groups to use persistent, aggressive, or unreasonable behavior against a coworker or a subordinate. As you listen to those, or as I read those definitions, some of the common themes that I think I see there and have also heard as I talk to people that feel that they've been a victim of workplace bullying are issues like the fact that it is repetitive. It's not someone having a bad day and blowing up at the moment and saying some things or doing some things or acting in certain ways that they shouldn't have. It's about behaviors that are repetitive in nature, happening over and over again. Another theme is that it is intimidating. The goal seems to be to put someone down and help someone feel higher up. It is intended to intimidate. It's not meant to simply express one person's frustration with a situation or even their anger. It's more about one person intimidating or being in an intimidating position over someone else. Third theme that I hear is the idea that it is abusive. It is something that causes pain. It does hurt. It isn't something that is easily avoided. It is an abusive act from at least one person to at least one other person. Another thing I've found is that it is risky to health. There are a lot of examples of people whose health has been negatively impacted when they have been bullied at work. There are studies out that show that people have more sick days, and you might think that, well, people have more sick days when bullying's going on in the office just because they want to avoid the bully, and I think there's probably some truth to that, but a lot of the heavy use of sick time when bullying is going on is simply because people get they feel bad in their bodies. It does cause gastrointestinal distresses, you feel sick at your stomach, nauseous, you can have anxiety reactions, you can be tense. There are risks to people's health. And the final thing is that it is an interference with work. It is not something that people can just ignore and keep on doing their job. Obviously, if people are taking a greater number of sick days because of the bullying, that's a very direct effect on work. But also it creates a thing that commands so much attention, particularly among the people that are being bullied, that they don't have the ability to focus on their work. So productivity as well as just time at the office is reduced when workplace bullying occurs. How frequently does this kind of thing occur? Some studies report that as many as 35% of employees are targets of bullying directly, and another 15% are witnesses or report that they have been witnesses of someone else being bullied. So at that point, you're looking at 40% of people in the workplace, according to some research, have either experienced bullying themselves or experienced it vicariously as they have watched other people being bullied. That's a pretty high number if you're thinking about nearly half of workers in the United States, and that's where the particular study I'm thinking about right now was done. Nearly half of the workers actually having personal experience with bullying behaviors. That's a pretty major impact on the American workplace. It might be helpful to, as we're thinking about what bullying is to look at what it is not. And again, we're thinking about workplace bullying specifically. It isn't harassment. Harassment, particularly harassment as related to protected classes, is an illegal activity. And many organizations have offices within their organization, or at least someone in their human resources office that is in charge of helping to determine whether something is harassment. After all, if harassment's going on and a business doesn't do anything to stop that, then they have some liability there for not responding to it. So harassment is a somewhat defined, a legally defined behavior that is considered illegal in every state in the union. Bullying is not trouble relating. It's not someone who just has a hard time getting along with other people. It isn't just a stressed relationship. It's not just someone that, hey, I don't want to be their buddy, and I don't want to go to lunch with them, and I don't want to go to the bar with them after work is over on Friday. It's not about that. It's not a stressed relationship. It is about an intimidating, abusive, and risky relationship. And the last thing, as I mentioned when I got started on this topic, is that it's not illegal. There is no state in the union where bullying behavior has been legally defined and legally made against the law. So there are bullying statutes that have been proposed. As of this moment, I don't believe that there's any state that's actually passed any of that legislation. But there are organizations in the United States that are working to make bullying illegal so that action can be taken, legal action can be taken when there is a bully. But obviously, if something's going to be made illegal, it does require that a very clear definition of what that behavior is be made, and that it is seen as harmful to others and something that it's apparent that our society wants to do something about and to stop. Well, there are health consequences very specific to workplace bullying, and one of them is the idea of post-traumatic stress disorder. People can have a bullying experience in the workplace that is so has such an effect on them, such a dramatic effect on them, that it does become PTSD. PTSD is a type of anxiety disorder that's triggered by a traumatic event, and the traumatic event can be either a singular event, and that's what you might think of as a traumatic event that might happen in a military conflict or observing or participating in a car accident or some other kind of event like that. But PTSD can also be triggered by a traumatic event that's repetitive in nature, and so bullying can be the cause of or the trigger for the trauma felt in someone who has post-traumatic stress disorder. You can experience or develop post-traumatic stress disorder when you actually experience the event yourself as the target, or if you're the witness to the event and it causes intense fear or a sense of helplessness or a sense of horror. People who have PTSD often experience intrusive memories. Those are the kinds of memories that you wish you didn't have, the wish that you could put away, but they intrude upon your conscious thought from time to time, most of the time, and the fact that they're intrusive would mean that they are doing so without your willing them into consciousness. You're not trying to remember something. It just comes upon you, and it bothers you at the moment that you feel it. So that intrusive memory is a symptom of PTSD. People can also get into a behavioral habit of avoiding certain situations, situations that might be either similar to or the kinds of situations where they experienced the traumatic event in the past, and they can also become emotionally numb as a way to protect themselves from the pain that they feel from the trauma. And people then also develop a sense of increased emotional arousal or anxiety, be very anxious, which can obviously come with lots of physical symptoms, whether that's tightness in the breathing or increased heart rate, increased blood pressure, shaking in the extremities. There can be lots of different kinds of physical symptoms that indicate a heightened level of anxiety or emotional arousal. So PTSD and the many symptoms that come along with that is one of the common outcomes of someone who has experienced workplace bullying on that repeated basis. The intrusive memories, the flashbacks, can obviously be almost re-traumatizing, and people sometimes also have upsetting dreams about the traumatic event, and that's the way those intrusive memories come in. The numbing can also lead to memory problems, trouble concentrating, and a sense of hopelessness about the future, avoiding activities that a person once enjoyed. The increased arousal can lead to a sense of overwhelming guilt or shame, even though the person who is the victim is not the perpetrator of the bullying behavior. They can also exhibit self-destructive behavior like drinking too much or trouble sleeping. They can be easily startled or frightened and can even get to the point where they hear or see things that aren't there. The other health consequences, problems with tension in your muscles, which can cause pain, phobias or fears that people develop, sleep disturbances, depression can be an outcome of that, and as I mentioned before, the digestive problems. There are other consequences to workplace bullying, things like people have financial problems because as a target they end up missing work because of sick leave or just avoiding work because of the bullying that's going on with them as the target. That can lead to taking time off work where you're not getting paid. Then that creates financial problems for themselves, their families, and that is a consequence of bullying for the individual who's the target. obviously, targets of bullying can have poor performance when they're at work because of the level of anxiety that they have thinking about being bullied and trying to avoid the bully. Other people who are not the targets also have consequences at work when there is bullying behavior and the people in charge of that office aren't doing something about it. That can lead to reduced morale of other employees, partially because they're concerned that their workplace doesn't do something to make the place feel safer, but also because they're afraid that they might become the next victim of bullying. And so their level of morale and self-confidence at work is reduced. There's also increased tension just generally, which can lead to disciplinary problems that really aren't directly related to the person who is the bully. And so that level of tension creates arguments between a couple of coworkers who are not even directly related to the bullying situation. And then, of course, people would logically complain or say something about the bullying behavior, and that can lead to grievances or resignations or transfers from one workplace to another. So left unchecked, left unresolved, bullying behaviors can have multiple consequences in the workplace. Some of this information is what's being used in many states to promote the workplace bullying new laws, the new statutes, because it isn't just a matter of people don't feel good being there, and it's not even just a matter of the consequences to the individuals involved, but there are really major consequences to the business or the organization that the bully works for. There was a lady named Valerie Cade who runs a website called Bully Free at Work, and she put together a bullying self-test, and you answer these questions with a Likert scale from strongly agree to strongly disagree to indicate whether or not or at what level you are being bullied. And the questions essentially address some of the dynamics or the issues that I was talking about earlier. There are 10 of them, and the first one is, does the person you're having trouble with repeatedly ignore you or not say hello when you greet them or not return your phone calls or emails? The second one is, does that other person dismiss what you're saying or put you down while you're alone with that person or in the presence of other people? The third question is, does the person you're having trouble with sabotage you or make you look foolish by forgetting to tell you about a meeting, or if the person is your boss, set you up to fail by making impossible demands of you? The fourth question is, does that person spread rumors, lies, and half-truths about you? The fifth question is, does that person frequently act impatient with you, treating you like you're incompetent? Does she or he blame and criticize you? Does that other person try to intimidate you by interrupting, contradicting, and glaring at you and giving you the silent treatment? The eighth question is, does that person tease, ridicule, insult, or play tricks on you, especially in front of others? The ninth one, does that person always insist on getting their own way and never apologize, never considering your point of view? And the 10th one is, does that other person leave you out of social and work situations as opposed to welcoming and inviting you in? They deliberately make ways to exclude you. Now, some of those things are things that might just naturally happen at work. Some of us don't necessarily want to be invited to or made part of social situations that are related to work, but the issues here are, does it feel like or does it seem to you like someone else is doing this specifically to you to intimidate you or to put you down or to exclude you and try in some way to make you in a lesser position than they are? Well, what do you do about it? Obviously, the first thing is to recognize the bullying behavior for what it is. Realize that it is what it is, and that it isn't just a matter of not getting along. You've thought about it, and if you're the victim, you've probably thought a lot about it and tried to come up with other explanations. Is this person just having a bad day? No, that's not it. This person is really seems out to get me, out to put me down, out to make me look like I'm not valuable to the organization. So recognizing it for what it is one of the first things to accomplish. Second thing is to recognize in your own mind that you're not the source of it, that if it is truly bullying behavior, it isn't because of your work, it isn't because of what you're doing at work, it's because this person is a bully, and recognize, thirdly, that it is about their control issues. It's about them and not you. So keep a diary of that person's behaviors and keep copies of written bullying. Oftentimes bullying will occur in notes to someone, or in this day and age, oftentimes done by emails. Keep copies of that, because any sort of action, official action that an organization takes, and certainly if it ever got to the point of being a legal action, would require written documentation of what was going on. And then report to the appropriate entity. Depending on the size of your business, it obviously may not be your supervisor if your supervisor is the bully, but most organizations will have someone, either a special office or someone in human resources, to whom you can go to talk about the bullying behavior and try to get some help. The problem being, of course, that a lot of organizations would rather not deal with the bullying behavior and would rather just act as if it wasn't going on, because sometimes the bully is someone that is maybe effective at their work, or they're seen as maybe a high producer for that organization, and they don't want to offend that person. And yet, in reality, even someone who is, let's say, an excellent producer who is acting in a bullying way, they overall are not good for the organization, because they cannot, no matter how good, quote-unquote, good they are in the organization, how effective they are in the organization in terms of meeting the organization's goals, whether it's sales or education or whatever, cannot make up for all of the lack of productivity that happens because of the effects on directly to their victim, and also the reduction in morale of the people who are exposed to it in a more indirect way. So it does make sense for businesses to deal with bullying, even though it's not fun. Sometimes people who are supposed to be supervisors and deal with bullies get intimidated themselves. We can talk some more in another show about ways to deal with other people's emotions, which can be the anger and aggressive kinds of emotions that come from bullying situations, but also other kinds of emotions, and deal with issues of personal boundaries. But for now, bullying is a thing that is not necessarily illegal, but that doesn't mean that it's acceptable, and it certainly is a harmful thing, very harmful thing to have happen in the workplace. Anything that you can do to bring attention of the organization to the fact that bullying behavior is going on should be appreciated by the organization. And ultimately, if it is not, and the organization does not want to be supportive of you, the one last resort that you do have is to not be working there. And sometimes I have seen organizations where it actually takes people leaving before someone decides, you know, this is really costing us too much, we've got to do something about it. So it is a relatively new area of thought. Of course, there's been a lot of talk about bullying that goes on in schoolyards, at school level, and there's been programs that have been funded by the state as well as other organizations to help reduce that kind of bullying behavior. And I hope that those do well to help decrease bullying in adults later on. But right now, we still do have bullying behaviors that occur in adults, and it's unfortunate, because it does really reduce our own happiness, as well as, frankly, is a costly thing to us in terms of just productivity in the workplace. Well, we are going to take a break and come back and answer some questions. We'll answer a question about workplace bullying that came in. And we'll also just answer some other questions about life. So remember that you can send us your questions by email, by emailing us at answers@andrewsinc.net. So we'll be back in a few minutes. You are listening to Andrew's Answers on Kanza Internet Radio.
Joe Thompson. I'm 29 years old and have a career that I love as a systems analyst. Career. It still sounds cool to say that word. I never could have gotten on this path without a college degree. And if the college me were here, he'd tell you.
I never would have gotten to college without big brothers, big sisters. I could have ended up anywhere, on the streets even. But college? Joe Thompson? Not likely. My big brother helped me out. He taught me I could do anything. At a time when a lot of people were saying just the opposite.
And to a 7-year-old, that means a lot. My big brother's name is Phil. And Phil is the reason that this 7-year-old grows up to be a systems analyst.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child. And that can last a lifetime. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
Welcome to the Maya Miguel Challenge. Meet Maya and the gang.
Oh, hi, I'm Maya.
Maya and her friends want you to get up and play, because it's always more fun to be active.
There's mountain biking, boating and fishing, mountain climbing and spelunking. Let's get started.
Get ready to take the Maya and Miguel Challenge.
Let's see.
Just go to letsmove.gov and look for Maya and Miguel. You'll find tons of fun activities that'll help keep you healthy and active. We Activo. You can also check out healthy recipes to try with your family, play cool games, and get free downloads. So come hang out with Maya, Miguel, and the whole gang.
Go!
Remember, whether you play sports, run, dance, or jump in place, just get up and play at least an hour a day. And don't forget, eat healthy to be your best. Maya and Miguel will show you how at letsmove.gov. That's letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and the Department of Health and Human Services.
Welcome back to Andrew's Answers, Life's Questions Answered, a radio program on Kanza Internet Radio. You can send us questions. We'll do our best to try to answer them. Send them to answers@andrewsinc.net. That's ANSWERS at Andrews Inc., which is ANDREWSINC.net. We'll change names so that you cannot be identified on the air, but we'd love to have your questions. And please remember that when we do talk about answers to life's questions, all statements are intended to be helpful in a general way, and answers are of a general nature. They are not intended to take the place of personal counseling or input from a mental health professional with whom you could work directly. I'm Dr. Rusty Andrews from Andrews & Associates, a private practice in Manhattan, Kansas. And we received a question from someone talking about workplace bullying, which got us thinking about this morning. And I want to just read you the question and then say a little bit about some things that this person could do. She writes, "Where I work, there are a lot of great people, except for one. I would have to classify him as a bully. When anyone except the boss disagrees with him or isn't quick to laugh at his jokes, he makes fun of us or insults us. He is very loud and pushy when he does this. While I don't think he would ever do anything physical to anyone, I have to admit he does make me a little scared. One time I talked to my boss about this situation, and he said I just needed to get a thicker skin and not let one blowhard get to me. Is there anything I can do? Well, this does raise some interesting ideas here as we're talking about more about dealing with workplace bullying behaviors. One is that in this particular case, the bully is a male. But interestingly, one of the most common dynamics of bullying or ways that bullying occurs is a female employee bullying another female employee. So I don't want anybody to think that it's all males that do bullying in the workplace. There certainly are a number of males that are workplace bullies, but it is not certainly limited to males. The other thing that I noticed from this question is that the bully is quick to laugh at the boss's jokes and is also very careful not to act in a bullying way toward the boss, and yet at the same time acts in a bullying way toward other people in the office. That's a good, from my perspective anyway, a good indicator of a person who is in fact a bully. This is not a personality problem that they have. They're clearly able to maintain a more positive relationship with someone, but they're just what used to be called, and I think still is in many places, a person who kisses up and kicks down. So they are always anxious to make the people above them think that they're just the greatest thing in the world, but they don't have any hesitation to behave in really ugly and negative ways to the people that they see as below them or people that they feel like they can have some sense of control. Oftentimes, bullying behaviors are because of a lack of self-confidence. So this person who walks around the office with a swagger and is constantly putting other people down may be operating out of a real sense of a lack of self-confidence within themselves. People with true self-confidence don't tend to act in bullying ways. They don't need to do that to make themselves feel more secure or better at the expense of other people. It's the bully who needs that within themselves in order to make themselves feel better. So, given that, is there anything this person can do? Well, one thing is she did talk to her boss about it, and unfortunately, she got the response that does on occasion occur, which is you just need to get over it and not pay any attention to it and have a thicker skin. This is obviously a dismissive kind of response. It allows the boss to make the person who is the victim of bullying be the one who's going to carry the burden of trying to make something better without the boss taking the risk to him or herself to actually say something to the bully. But if the bully is, which is a typical case, a person with a very, very much a lack of self-confidence, then one of the things that they will look for in a victim is someone who doesn't also have self-confidence. They tend to not approach or attack someone who has their own sense of confidence. So developing your own personal sense of confidence, and as I sometimes talk to clients, you just act like you do, whether you do or not, and the behavior itself sometimes can help you feel more confident. And I'm not talking about you acting like a bully back to a bully. Your mom probably told you at some point two wrongs don't make a right. And I think that, in fact, that's probably true. It doesn't make sense to do the same thing back to that person, particularly from your perspective, because you don't have the administrative power over that person to make something like that stick. But for you to have a sense of self-confidence when you're around that person to to exhibit a sense of self-confidence can go a long ways toward deflecting or encouraging the bully to move off of you as a target. Now, it doesn't help the bullying behavior because it's quite likely the person who is bullying is going to find somebody else to be their target. But for you, it can make life better for you. So how do you show that sense of self-confidence? I think the ultimate way, and we'll just start right at the top and maybe work our way down, but the ultimate way to show that sense of self-confidence is to be able to express yourself to the bully even when they're attempting to bully you with statements like, it sounds like you're just trying to get me to do something and you're bullying me, actually calling it what it is, being able to say that to their face without being angry, without adding emotion to it, but just simply making a statement of fact would certainly exude a sense of self-confidence. Now, I also realize that most of us would find it pretty difficult to do that. And so another way to exude some self-confidence in that situation is just to respond to the bully and try to reach past the words that they're saying and acknowledge that they seem to be angry. I can tell you're really upset about something. Why don't we talk about this later? You are taking control of the situation without trying to take control of the bully. Just another way to essentially stand up for yourself and be calm. While inside you may have a lot of emotions and that sense of fear may be kicking in, but being calm outwardly can go a long ways toward you making yourself not a target of bullying. It is really more about you expressing your own self-control in the face of the bullying, which then makes you less and less of a target. Now, another thing I think that can be done is to go up the chain of command, if there is one in your organization, if it is large enough to have one, and talk to someone higher up. Ultimately, in my experience, a person who has truly gone down the path of being a bully and has become an habitual bully will oftentimes not be able to respond to anything other than someone in the administrative position above them in the hierarchy of the organization telling them that this is not going to occur anymore and that they are in danger of not being part of that organization anymore if they continue to do that. Again, I'm not saying that that even necessarily works, but at least it sets the stage for someone not being an employee anymore if they are continuing in that bullying behavior. And of course, ultimately, if the organization refuses to do anything about it and all avenues of redress have been addressed, then you may have to make a decision about whether or not that's the kind of place that you even want to be supporting with your own work. Do you want to be a part of that kind of an organization? And you may have to find a job in another place. I don't say that as in that's the first thing you ought to be doing, but ultimately you do get to make choices for yourself too. And you do not have to put up with or just live with that kind of bullying behavior. All right, well, let's take another quick break. It's time for us to head into the final third of the program. When we come back, it won't be about bullying anymore. We have a question about roommate trouble and also a question about step families. So we'll get off of the workplace issues and answer some more questions about life. Remember, you can email us a question at answers@andrewsinc.net. I'm Dr. Rusty Andrews. You're listening to Andrews Answers, Life's Questions Answered on Konza Internet Radio.
All right, class, let's hear what everyone did this weekend. Jill?
Well, I raised my older sister to a big oak tree. It was at least 100 years old. My mom said I must have set a record or something. And then we went down by a stream and perched up on this huge rock and saw all of these little minnows swimming around way below us. And then I rescued my little brother from an evil slug king who was guarding him at the bush fortress. And my sister and I brought him back to our super twig fort for safety. And then we all laid out and told stories until it got dark. And the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Wow! Awesome!
Where were you, Jill?
Yeah, we went to the forest. It's not that far away. Anyone want to come this weekend?
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week and find the fun, adventurous you. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Romaine. As a former model, I used to walk runways all over the world. Paris, Milan, New York. This is Felice Diarra. As a local health worker, he walks the pathways of his village in Mali, West Africa, every day to help treat severely ill children. Like many children in the developing world, those in Salif's village are threatened by common illnesses that kill millions worldwide. But unlike villages without a local health worker, the children in Salif's village get the care they need to survive. And even though you can't walk in his shoes, you can help him with his work. Help one, save many. See where the good goes at goodgoes.org and find out all the ways you can help get the good where it needs to go. Brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
Army bases, welcome to the ocean. I've sailed the seven seas 100 times and found something I like even more than a treasure. Tis the ocean, beautiful and clear. Right now, I'd be sailing over the Great Barrier Reef. It just shivers me timbers thinking of all the fish and coral below me. Wait, what's that floating by? The plastic bag! By Blackbeard's eyepatch, that's disgusting. Why did you know that many of these things come from folks throwing them carelessly on the ground? It'd be true. Unless I hand by always recycling and disposing of your trash properly. Boys, get the plank ready. Somebody's got to dive in and get that bag. Any volunteers? All right, fine. I'll do it myself. Cannonball! Find out what you can do to help keep the oceans healthy at keepoceansclean.org. Brought to you by the Keep Oceans Clean Alliance and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Andrew's Answers, Life's Questions Answered on Kanza Internet Radio. I'm Dr. Rusty Andrews of Andrews & Associates in Manhattan, Kansas. And you can send us your questions by emailing us at answers@andrewsinc.net. answers@andrewsinc.net. Well, here's a question that was sent to us via email. It's about stepfamilies, and the question is, how do you deal with stepchildren after the death of your spouse? These stepchildren want to involve themselves in my personal life. My children are grown, they're in their 30s, and they seem to feel they have the right to not only show up uninvited, but also to judge who I visit with, etc. Well, this it can be a tough problem because you're dealing with family members. And while earlier we were talking about workplace related issues, and you can remove yourself from the workplace ultimately if you have to by quitting a job, but it's not so easy to do so with members of your family. I suppose my first question would be, what is motivating your children to do this? I think sometimes children, particularly adult children, feel like they need to do things to take care of their mom after the death of a spouse, or take care of their dad after the death of his spouse. This particular writer was a female, and her husband had passed away. And so they may feel like they're just doing something to be helpful. And part of dealing with that might be being clear with them that you appreciate what what they're trying to do. You recognize that they do have a concern for you. You're looking at their actions and you are seeing it in a positive way. However, you want to encourage them to understand that you don't need them to take care of you, and that you very much are capable of taking care of yourself, even though you have been through this very traumatic situation. And it strikes me that ultimately, if it could be resolved by simply talking and having a conversation about it, one in which you're not being accusatory or judgmental about their behavior, but more accepting or giving them the benefit of the doubt and credit for wanting to be caring toward you and just simply not knowing how to do that, and then going on from there and telling them what they can do that would be helpful, would be the best way for everybody concerned. So after that was over, you feel good, they feel good, they feel appreciated, but they also know what they can do that really is going to be helpful to you. And I would give them ideas about what they can be helpful to you, to what they can do that would be helpful to you. Perhaps they can, you can set a specific time that they're going to come over. Would you come over on Sunday afternoon and let's have dinner together? That would be a lot of fun, to just enjoy each other's company. And you can bring the potato salad and I'll cook a roast, and we can just have a good time together. So you're acknowledging that they want to do something to be with you, and you want them to do something so you can be with them, but you're setting a specific time for that to occur, as opposed to just show up whenever you want to. But short of that, if that doesn't work, I do think that you have to set clear lines, clear boundaries of what you're willing to accept, and say what those are, be very clear about what those are, and try to say those to them directly in a calm and clear and confident way. You can say, I understand you are wanting to be helpful, but I don't need you here taking care of me this way, and I actually am going to ask you not to be here unless you call first. And if they, for instance, using that as an example of some way to set a clear boundary, and if they do just show up on your door, then don't let them in. Tell them that, hey, you know, I said I wanted you to call if you were going to come over, and you didn't do it, and, you know, I'm busy with something else right now. Why don't you give me a call tomorrow and we'll set a time to get together? Now, that's not the first way you handle it. If you can handle it in a way that doesn't have to be quite so confrontational, I think that that's perfectly grand. But it is quite possible that in situations like this that there are people even in your family who might be trying to take advantage of you. And if that's the case, then I think it is necessary for you to be very clear about what you are willing to accept, and what you're not willing to accept. Be sure that you actually state that to them, and don't simply try to get that message to them by telling someone else. Let them know that you can take care of yourself. And then when there are things that you can use them to do, be quick to ask them to do those things. And when they do respect your privacy, when they do do what you've asked them to do, be sure and let them know that you appreciate that. That can go a long ways toward helping to mend any hurt feelings that people might have. One of the things that I think does happen is that we get really clear about our boundaries sometimes. We start to actually get what we're looking for, and then we fail to respond in a positive way or a thankful way to the people who are now doing what we ask them to do. It's a great idea to say thanks when somebody does something that you've asked them to do, and you always get more of what you are thankful for than you do of just telling somebody to do something and then not recognizing it. These people are your children and stepchildren and children-in-law, And it's probably going to be healthier for you to have the assumption that they are doing what they're doing because they care about you and they just need to know exactly what it is that you do want them to do. That's going to make you feel better. But ultimately, if telling them that doesn't work, then you still do have the right as an adult human being to set clear boundaries and expect those to be followed, and to not respond to attempts to or block attempts to break those boundaries and to cross those boundaries inappropriately. It's a hard thing, and of course, times after the death of dad or mom or stepdad, stepmom or father-in-law, mother-in-law, it is very emotional. And so, you know, another thing you might want to do is actually reach out to them in a way in which you're in control and invite them either to come over or say, let's go out to dinner, or I'll come over to your house and let's spend some time together, and just ask them how they're doing with it. So you become the person who is in the position of taking care of them a little bit more, as opposed to them being in the position of trying to take care of you. And you can reach out to them, and I think you might be able to manage that relationship a little bit better that way. But don't be afraid, ultimately, of being able to or taking the ability to set clear boundaries and communicate those clearly to the other person. Another email that we have is about roommate trouble. And the question is, person says, my roommate is constantly complaining about one of her classmates that is bothering her in class, and I'm getting tired of listening to her. What can I do? This struck me as a question that might have a lot to do with the issue of triangles. One of the things that happens in human relationships is that we use something that's been called the triangle or a relationship triangle in order to create stability in relationships. And frankly, it's not that different than the stepfamily issue I was just talking about. This person's roommate is constantly complaining about one of her classmates, but she's not complaining to or talking to her classmate. She's talking to the person who wrote the question in. And that is a way to make sure you don't ever get your problem solved. There are three people in this relationship. There's our correspondent, there is her roommate, and there is the roommate's classmate that is bothering her. Until the roommate is willing to talk directly to the classmate, there's probably not much that's going to get fixed. It's going to stay in this triangle of a relationship, this three-sided relationship. I talk about the fact that when you are children, or when we were kids, we rode tricycles. And the reason we rode tricycles is they had three wheels and it was hard to turn them over. It was hard to hurt yourself riding a tricycle. Triangles are very stable. They are a geometric shape that is very stable. And they are in relationships very stable because the anxiety, the tension, the angst that's going on between, for instance, in this situation, the roommate and the classmate, is shunted through the person who is our writer here this morning. And that makes it very stable. But also, when you were riding a tricycle as a kid, the one thing you wanted to do more than anything else was to ride a two-wheeler. You wanted to ride a bicycle because you could go faster, you could go out on the street, and you go farther away. You had a lot better time. It was a lot more fun riding a bicycle than it was riding a tricycle. On the other hand, you are much more prone to fall over and scrape your elbow or crack your shin when you're riding a bicycle. So it's more dangerous. It's just more functional and a lot more fun. When you go to the Olympics, you see bicycle races. You don't really see tricycle races. So tricycles are stable, not as much fun. Bicycles are less stable, a little more dangerous, but a lot more enjoyable. And I think it's the same way with relationships. You, in relationships, find the best relationships when you're having a relationship directly with the other person as opposed to trying to go through someone else. But those are also the situations that can be more anxiety producing and make you more nervous, and those relationships are more easily broken or harmed by things that are done or said that are inappropriate. But ultimately, that's the way the relationship's going to work. So what I would suggest to our writer here today is that she take herself out of being the third side in that triangle. Her goal is not to try to fix her roommate's problems, but just suggest to the roommate that if she wants anything to change about her relationship with her classmate, she needs to find it within herself a way to talk to her classmate directly. And talking about it to the roommate isn't going to make it any better. On the other hand, I suppose our writer could talk to her roommate and say, you know, are you really just wanting to blow off steam? And then our writer's going to have to make a decision whether or not she's willing to play that role with her roommate. But again, the worst thing that could happen would be to start another triangle and the person who's writing to us today actually go to someone else to complain about her roommate without actually talking to her roommate about it. So triangles are, they can be, frankly, effective ways to bring some stability to relationships in the short term. But in the long term, the way people have effective relationships is more in the dyadic relationship or in the person-to-person, two people facing each other and having a relationship. So another example of the way that triangles work and the reason why they seem sometimes kind of childish is that when you were in junior high and you liked the person in your class that sat on the other side of the room, you didn't go up and talk to them directly. You went and talked to one of their friends or one of your friends, and you would say things like, do you think he or she likes me? Or do you think if I asked them to go sit with me in the cafeteria, do you think they would? That's the way you do it when you're in junior high. But you soon realize, and hopefully realize by the time you get into high school, that the only way you're actually going to develop a relationship with that other person is to go and talk to that other person directly. Well, just another example of the fact that in human relationships, triangles can be kind of safe. They can be ways of thinking and talking and doing relationships indirectly, but they're not really effective in developing those kinds of relationships. So if this person, our writer, has a roommate that it continues to complain and she doesn't want to be the person who is the listener to that all the time, she can simply say, you know, I really don't want to listen to that anymore. I think if you want to get that fixed, I encourage you to go talk to your classmate and get that taken care of. But I don't want to do that anymore. And if the roommate continues, you can exercise your ability to simply walk away from that situation and enforce your own sense of boundaries there and take yourself out of that position. Well, I hope those answers are helpful. They're very common kinds of questions, trouble with roommates and relationships and trouble with families and stepfamilies. Those are the kinds of questions that we answer here on Andrew's Answers. Please remember that when we do talk about answers to life's questions, all statements are intended to be helpful in a general way, and answers are of a general nature. They're not intended to take the place of personal counseling or input from a mental health professional with whom you would work directly. Thank you for listening today to Andrew's Answers. Remember to send us your questions via email at answers, A-N-S-W-E-R-S, at andrewsinc, andrewsinc.net. Our program today is produced by Megan Andrews. I am Dr. Rusty Andrews at Andrews & Associates in Manhattan, Kansas. You can reach me at 785-539-5455. And listen again next week to Andrews Answers, Life's Questions Answered, right here on Kanza Internet Radio.